Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
What's going on, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising with new topics every single weekend, jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And we have a very fun episode today, as we're going to be giving our Clash in Paris, I think that's what it's called, the next WWE PLE predictions upcoming this Saturday, August 31st in Paris. Actually, I believe it is Sunday, actually. Usually it's on Saturday, but now it's on a Sunday. We're also going to be recapping Dana White's Contender Series Season 9, Episode 3, which was utterly insane. We also have some new UFC fights and some updated rankings to bring to you guys today. There is no UFC event this weekend. That is right. They're taking a week off. They're actually oddly in Paris next weekend. So Paris is getting absolutely bombarded with TKO. But after that, we go 2 weeks on for UFC, 1 week off, and then it's all cylinders firing, I'm pretty sure, until Thanksgiving. So we'll have plenty of content to discuss. I am now halfway through my shifts at the Minnesota State Fair. I have made some money, so that is a good thing. I've met some very lovely people, and I have also strengthened my forearms a lot as I have been just frying pickles relentlessly. So that has been certainly, something. It's been an experience of sorts, but yeah, it's been interesting. It's been interesting. So I'm happy to be here having a day off to actually record this, or tomorrow's the day off from recording this late at night. So I best get going with things, and you best get strapped in, because we have a lot to discuss with you guys today. Gosh, I can't even speak. I'm just so excited to bring about all these new things, such as new UFC fights. That's right. We have some new UFC fights to bring to you guys today. The UFC has just been on absolute fire announcing fights, and hey, I'm here for it. I absolutely love it. So we have 10 new fights to bring to you guys today. 10 new UFC fights, and they are in no particular order. They are actually in the order that they were announced. So first off, UFC Vancouver, of course, going down in Vancouver, Canada, October 18th, has a lightweight matchup between Kyle Propolik and Drew Dober. Kyle Propolik already back after his defeat to Benoit Saint-Denis earlier this year in May, and he's actually 0-3. In the UFC, he had an earlier stint, I think, in 2019, went 0-2, and now he's back. All right, he really hasn't done anything much with his career. It's tough to say how he's even earned himself another UFC fight, but it is against the veteran Drew Dober. Drew Dober will be competing in his 26th UFC matchup, and he is unfortunately coming off a nasty knockout to Manuel Torres. At least I think that was the last fight Drew Dober has had. I swear this dude has just had some very unfortunate luck as of late, but this is a very winnable fight for him. Both of these guys are in their late 30s, and I think they're definitely setting up Drew Dober to get a win here. However, Kyle is from Canada, so maybe he'll pull out that little home crowd victory. We'll have to see. Another matchup going down on that card at Rogers Arena, October 18th. Bantamweight division, as Charles Jourdain will look to make another go at bantamweight as he takes on dangerous Davy Grant. Davy Grant coming off a big, big win in his last matchup. He beat, was it Damon Blackshear, I believe, in shocking fashion after almost 2 years off. He is now 17-7 professionally and has taken on Charles Jourdain. Charles was originally slated, I think, to take on Damon Blackshear. Might have been someone else I'm trying to think of. Charles recently had to pull out of a fight. He is historically from Canada. They put him on every Canadian card, and he's hit or miss. He is always hit or miss with whether he wins or he loses, so we'll see how he does here, but Davy Grant will not be an easy matchup whatsoever. Davy Grant is 10 years Charles Jourdain senior, as he is 39 years old compared to the age of 29 for Charles Jourdain. Major matchup going down in the unranked welterweight scene, as Jake Matthews will be taking on Neil Magny in Perth, Australia, September 27th. Welterweight division, Jake Matthews has been on absolute tear. His win streak is either at 4 or 5, and he recently made easy work of Chidi Enchukani. He also holds wins over Li Jingliang, Diego Sanchez in his career. He's very talented. He takes on Neil Magny, who recently picked up his 30th professional victory. Who did Neil Magny turn away? I honestly can't remember. This dude has had 35 UFC fights solo. Safe to say that this man has so many fights, I can't even keep track of who he has been fighting. But he recently did engage in a matchup, trying to use my UFC brain powers. I can't help you. I'm so sorry. I really just generally don't know. Neil Magny, one of the ultimate gatekeepers. This should be an easy win for Jake Matthews. But honestly, if Neil Magny wins, I will not be surprised. Sticking with the welterweight division and sticking with Perth, Australia, Jonathan Mikuleff is back. Jonathan, after his victory over Kevin Jusset in his UFC debut, is now back, and he's taking on the Welsh gangster, Obon Elliott. Obon, unfortunately, ran into tougher competition than he had originally planned for him when he lost his last matchup, but before that, he had finished Kaique Brito, Preston Parsons, Wasil Hafez. He had been on absolute tear, and he is also from Wales. Jonathan, the hometown Australian, last fought at UFC 312. This should be a very interesting matchup for both these guys. I think this will be certainly a turning point for both of their careers. Actually, who did Obon Elliott even lose to in his last matchup? I remember he fought someone who, was it Ramiz Brahmaj that he fought? It might have been Ramiz Brahmaj. They really have nothing. How is there nothing on the internet about what this guy has done? Suk Hyung Ko. Oh my gosh, he lost to Suk Hyung Ko. That's all I got for you guys. I cannot remember that, but I fairly remember that faintly. Was that at International Fight Week? I think it was, actually. I don't know, but Obon is back. He's taking on Jonathan Mikuleff. That's all you need to know. Another matchup coming at you. This one, UFC Vegas 110. This is like the third or fourth fight announced for UFC Vegas 110. Bantamweight division, as Timmy Kwamba gets his third fight in the UFC as he takes on Chang Ho Lee. Timmy shockingly beat Roberto Romero. That very much surprised me. And as for Chang Ho Lee, I mean, dude had a great debut against Cortavious Romeus. Also holds a win over Xiao Long. 11-1 for Chang Ho Lee, 9-3 for Timmy Kwamba. This should be a win for Chang Ho Lee, but we'll have to see. Should be on the prelims November 1st at the Apex. Another matchup, UFC 321 in Abu Dhabi has a new prelim, as Abdul Karim El Salwadi is back, getting another opportunity to pick up a UFC victory as he takes on Matheus Camilo, who also lost his UFC debut. Both of these guys just had lackluster fights last time out. Matheus Camilo actually is 23 years old. Wow. That is actually 24. He was born in 2001. That's weird to think of. He is 24 years old. As for Abdul, 15-4, he's coming in 30 years old. This should be an interesting matchup. I probably lean more so to Matheus Camilo. And the biggest matchup that I would say we've had announced, actually, there might be a women's one bigger than this, but for UFC Rio de Janeiro, October 11th, this one's going to be on the main card as the number 14th ranked welterweight Gabriel Bonfim takes on Randy Rude Boy Brown. Someone told me that Randy Brown is actually 8-2 in his last 10, and his only losses are a bad split decision to Brian Battle and the current welterweight champion, Jack Della Maddalena. I could not believe that. I actually completely did not realize that Randy Brown has been on an absolute tear. As for Gabriel Bonfim, picked up the biggest win of his career over Wonderboy Thompson, also holds finishes over Chaos Williams, Trevin Giles. He's very talented. Of his 18 victories, 16 of them have actually came by finish. He's 5-1 in the UFC, and his only defeat is to Nicholas Dalby, which I guess isn't that good, but that was just him, you know, gassing out too early and getting hit with one too many knees. Randy Brown should provide a great stylistic matchup on the feet, but Gabriel is always a challenge on the ground. We'll see who comes out on top. Here's a matchup that's going down at UFC Paris, being made on 2 weeks' notice. Welterweight division, as Axel Sofa, your current Aries FC lightweight champion, will be moving up in weight to take on Rise McKee. Rise McKee is 1-4 in the UFC and holds a win over Jai Herbert. That's about as good as you're going to get from Rise McKee. As for Axel, look, 10-0, one draw. Dude's been on absolute tear outside the UFC. They wanted to get him on this card, which only makes me think that he is being set up to absolutely dominate Rise McKee. Rise is 14-6 with a draw. Yeah, I'm riding with Axel. So fun. Two more matchups for you. First one, UFC Vegas 110 is welcoming newcomer Kevin Christian. I have no idea if he fought on Dana White's Contender Series last season or something. He is 30 years old from Brazil, but he's taking on Billy Elekana. Billy Elekana coming in for his third fight of the year. He has taken Bogdan Guskov on short notice. He has upset Ivo Aslan, and here he finds himself in another matchup at UFC Vegas 110. Billy 8-2 will be taking on the Brazilian Kevin Christian, and I will have to see how this one goes, but as of right now, I think I'm leaning with Billy Elekana. And the last matchup that we have had officially announced, this one for UFC 322 in Madison Square Garden, November 15th. That's right, the first fight announced for UFC 322 is the number 3 ranked woman's flyweight, cold-blooded, set her nickname first, cold-blooded Erin Blanchfield, taking on the number 8 ranked Tracy Cortez. These two have actually fought before. And Tracy Cortez beat Erin Blanchfield. That is right, back in Evicta FC. Tracy Cortez beat Erin Blanchfield. I mean, Tracy Cortez is actually really good. Wins over Vivian Arujo, Jasmine Jasu DeVicious. She's pretty talented. Now, as for Erin Blanchfield, wins over Andrade, Rose Namajunas, close fights with Man and Fiora. You know, this is going to be a very good woman's matchup. Might even sneak on the main card, dare I say. I don't know for certain, though. But those are all your new UFC fights you need to be aware of. A lot of good ones that they have given us. They've also given us some new updated UFC rankings, which we're going to talk about real quick before we talk about Dana White's Contender Series. So, after UFC Shanghai, we have had rankings updates, and I'm excited to discuss them all with you. So, first off, no changes in any women's division. None whatsoever. There are rumors circulating that the number 1 ranked Virta Jandidoba is taking on the number 5 ranked Mackenzie Dern for the vacant women's strawweight belt, as Zhang Weili has signed a contract to fight Valentina Shevchenko later in the year. I don't know if it's for certain. The UFC hasn't announced it. They pressured Dana White. He said, go ask Zhang Weili. I don't even know. People were reporting it all over Twitter. But if so, that is massive. And I also find it massive that they elected to go with Mackenzie Dern because Virna Jandidoba holds wins over Jan Chonin and Amanda Limo. So I think that's good matchmaking. If you ask me, Mackenzie Dern finally gets a chance to win the belt. And Virna Jandidoba deserves to fight for the belt as well. And as for Zhang Weili, it's kind of a shame she can't become a double champ. If out of anyone, she deserves to become a double champ. But I can also see that the UFC doesn't want to run into instances where fighters just aren't defending their belt. But similar to how they gave Iatopira 2 belts, I'm sure they would give Zhang Weili 2 belts if she beat Valentina Shevchenko. They are currently the number 1 and number 2 women pound for pound on the planet in the rankings. Absolutely love that. Now as for women's bantamweight division, dead as a doornail. Men's heavyweight division, no changes, and nothing is really going on. The heavyweight division is in a very rough spot. We just need to get to Tom Aspinall and Ciryl Gane. Now, we did have some changes in the men's light heavyweight division. Johnny Walker, following his victory, moves from 13-12, passing Nikita Krylov, who drops to number 13. Alonzo Medifield also passes Zhang Mingyang, who drops to 15, as he moves up to 14. Johnny Walker, I presume, will get someone coming out of that Carlos Ubert, Dominic Reyes defeat. Dare I say, Bogdan Guskov with a defeat. Dare I say, loser of Alexander Rakic and Azamat Mirzakhanov. He is going to be getting a top 10 guy. I can just feel it. As for Nikita Krylov, Alonzo Menifield, and Zhang Mingyang, they are most likely going to be fighting guys outside of the UFC rankings. So we'll have to see what goes down. But good for Johnny Walker. He's moved up in the rankings and he's back on the winning track. Moving on to the men's middleweight division, as despite not fighting in almost over a month, Rainer Day Ritter moves past Israel Adesanya from 5 to 4. That's right, Rainer Day Ritter is now ranked number 4 in the men's middleweight rankings. He has a big fight coming up with Anthony Hernandez in October, which might even give us our next middleweight title challenger. You know, it's going to be who's ever more exciting between Rainer Day Ritter and Anthony Hernandez, and Nazanin Imavov and Kyle Barallo. So we'll look to see what happens there, but Rainer Day Ritter moves up to number 4. No changes at welterweight, as we have really had no updates in any welterweight fights. Like, I kid you not, the top 10 welterweights, even the champion, scratch that, guys, the top 15 welterweights, the only confirmed fight we have is Gabriel Bonfim and Kevin Holland. That's it. The number 14 and 15 guys are the only confirmed fights we have that needs to be an issue. Now, obviously, we know that Islam Makhachev is going to be taking on Jack Della Maddalena, but it's not confirmed. So as of right now, nothing's going on. Welterweight, that drastically needs to change. Lightweight, they always fluctuate who's ranked at number 15. And as of right now, they just put Joe Alvarez back in the rankings. Now, I love Joe Alvarez. Joe Alvarez is awesome. His last win was December 2024. Can this guy get fights? He has a 100% finishing rate with 22 victories. Come on, 14 of them in round one. Can we get Joe Alvarez a fight? I don't know if he's going to be fighting the loser of Benoit Saint-Denis and Joe Alvarez, if they're going to have him fight Michael Chandler. I have no idea. Can we get Joe Alvarez a fight? Why are we putting him in the rankings? Moving up to featherweight, or I guess down in weight, if we want to view it like that. But when you kind of scroll on the page of the rankings, it's just kind of how it goes. Aljamain Sterling moves up to the number 5 spot in the rankings as Brandon Ortega drops to 7, just as we predicted. Absolutely love it for Aljamain Sterling. And I think fights with Yair Rodriguez, fights with maybe winner or loser of Diego Lopez and Jane Silva will be next. Dare I even say Arnold Allen? Aljamain Sterling is in a very good position. As for Brian Ortega, I legit have no idea. Does he move up to lightweight? Do we feed him to Steve Garcia or David Onama? I don't know. If anything, I think Brian Ortega should just hang him up. He just has nothing going for him right now. Bantamweight, lots going on between making matchups. I knew Umar, Sugar Sean, Piotr Jan, Song Yedong, they all have fights being rumored and made. Devin Figueroa, Marlon Vera, Mario Bautista, all having rumored fights and planned fights going down. But as of right now, you just have Merab Dvalishvili and Corey Sandhagen as the big book fight. No changes whatsoever, but the bantamweight division is moving very nicely. The last official change we have, as there are, of course, no changes in the men's pound for pound, is the men's flyweight division, as Charles Johnson jumps 2 spots up to number 13, passing Bruno Silva and Ramazan Temeriev. Now, this is very interesting, as Ramazan Temeriev beat Charles Johnson in March, okay? So we are not even 6 months removed from him beating Ramazan Temeriev, and due to Ramazan Temeriev not going out and picking up any other wins, but Charles Johnson going out and actually picking up 2 wins, Charles Johnson is ranked in at number 13. And if you're asking me, I think he's going to get a big fight next. Dare I say Alex Perez at 8? Dare I say Manel Cape at 7? Dare I say Steve Versig at 11? I really like that matchup. I'm super happy for Charles Johnson. And for Ramazan Temeriev and Bruno Silva, obviously Bruno Silva is fighting someone outside of the rankings in the Hung Seng Park. And as for Ramazan Temeriev, I don't know what to do with this guy, if I'm being honest. Does he fight Asuel Mabayev? Tough to say, but yeah, UFC rankings are certainly looking interesting. But that's all we have.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
For the update, UFC rankings will be back in 2 weeks, 3 weeks before the next rankings update. Going to be a while before we have any changes there. But we are going to have some changes to the roster, as we have signed 5 new fighters, courtesy of Dana White's Contender Series 9.3. It is labeling. Guys, I'm going to tell you right now, this was the greatest Dana White's Contender Series episode of all time. I caught all 5 fights. There were 5 knockouts, 4 in round 1, and the other one that didn't happen in round 1 was a round 3 comeback with 2 minutes left. I mean, this was easily the greatest viewing experience I've had watching Dana White's Contender Series, and it's crazy because you'd watch a fight and you'd be like, that can't be topped. Then you'd be like, oh my gosh, they topped it. Oh my gosh, they topped it. Oh my gosh, they topped it. And they ended with a bang. It was phenomenal. Let's discuss it. First off, kicking things off, we headed to the men's heavyweight division as Dante Johnson was taking on Darian Abbey. And Darian Abbey had a massive size advantage. He had the height, he had the reach. The one thing he didn't have, the punching power, as Dante Johnson outstrikes him 15-9 and knocks him out in 1 minute and 4 seconds. It was a TKO. You know, we didn't have any actual official full-on like faceplant knockouts tonight, but all of them were some beautiful TKOs. And Dante Johnson, 6-0. All of them all 6 of his wins, round 1 knockouts, all of them coming within the first 3 minutes. All of them have happened in the last year. This guy is insane. Okay, now I will say, you know, he is 5'8". Okay, he's 5'8" and has a 74-inch reach. So this guy might need to go down to light heavyweight. His size is definitely at his disadvantage. But Dante Johnson makes easy work of Darian Abbey. Darian Abbey falls to 9-5, nowhere near UFC level quality. And I think everyone realizes Dante is good. I mean, especially coming in and getting a minute knockout. But the size is definitely going to hurt him. And people are saying, I'm just going off of what MMA theory on Instagram posts, is that he could fight someone like Sean Sheriff, someone like Tuco, someone like, I don't even know. There's another lower level ranked heavyweight of some regard. Not a Muhammad Usman, but certainly some Hamdi Abdelwabi, someone like that, to really test if he can hang in those areas. But the man hits hard. The man has a bit of a personality, and I absolutely loved it. So Dante Johnson kicks off the night with a win, and the 26-year-old from Fond du Lac, Wisconsin, earns himself our first contract of the evening. We then dove into our next matchup at lightweight, and it was Christian Perez taking on Manuel Sosa. Christian Perez trains out of Mexico. I mean, a lot of great Mexican fighters know this guy. Brandon Moreno even popped up in a graphic endorsing him as a good fighter. And we begin the first two rounds, and they are dominant rounds for Christian Perez. Almost 8 minutes of control time between the two rounds, including 4 minutes, 35 seconds in round number one. It was looking rough for Manuel Sosa. Now, Manuel Sosa clearly better on the feet. That was so evident, but he just kept being taken down. 3 of 8 on takedown attempts. And by the way, of those 3 of 8, 3 of 4 through the first two. But round three came around, and the 18-fight veteran showed his skills as he dug deep, hung in there, defended 4 takedowns, outstruck Christian beautifully, and TKOs him with 2 minutes left. Manuel Sosa, you beautiful bastard. You are amazing. Utterly amazing. I mean, I cannot get enough of this guy. This dude is an absolute savage. Improves to 13-1. Oh, wait, yeah, it was Marcio Barbosa who had all those fights. But Manuel Sosa, nonetheless, still super good. He hits hard, too. All right, he hits super, super hard, coming in getting his 8th career knockout, 11th career finish. Mind you, he holds a record of 13-1. This dude is freaking talented, and he easily didn't have the best performance. Everyone was kind of saying that, but he had a great comeback. I mean, this guy was down on all 3 judges' scorecards. He was down on everyone at home scorecards, and he comes back, gets the comeback victory in dominant fashion. I'm excited to see what we get by this guy. I really am. Lightweight division, you have an absolute savage on your hands. People are saying Diego Ferreira, Martus Rebeque are names he should fight. I absolutely agree. Let's throw him right in there. Let's throw him in the mix. 27 years old from Brazil. The win streak extends to 4. I am happy to see what this guy does. Manuel Sosa, you're looking very good. Then, up next, the biggest favorite on the card, the 11-1 favorite, Abdulrahman Yakayev, makes easy work of Alik Lorenz. They're gassing up Alik Lorenz. They're like, this guy trains with Jared Cannonier. This guy he was setting records at the UFC Performance Institute, like doing all these things. And Abdulrahman Yakayev was like, yeah, I'm from Czechia, and I also train out of Germany now. I'm also 24 years old, and I'm undefeated. Okay, hello. And he TKOs him in 30 seconds. 16 significant strikes to 1. I kid you not, every single shot landed that he hit on Alik Lorenz. Just overhand, overhand, then a knee, then another overhand, then a hook, then a hook, then a hook, and he's down, and that's that. 30-second finish from Abdulrahman Yakayev, and he said, get me on that UFC Rio card, get me on that UFC Abu Dhabi card. Yeah, we're getting this guy on those cards. This kid is 24 years old, 7-0. He has 6 finishes now, all of them in round 1. Insane. Utterly insane. A 30-second knockout. Alik Lorenz falls to 6-2. Clearly not UFC level, but this kid, 7-0, 24 years old. Yeah, we absolutely love that. And they're talking about his submission game the entire time. They're like, all right, clearly he is much better than Alik Lorenz in the submission department. And he goes out and starches him in 30 seconds. One of my favorite finishes of the entire season, just and how easy it happened. Like, literally, you're just watching it and the fight's over. You're kind of like, oh, that's it? Oh, okay, I'm fine with that. But like, jeez, oh my goodness. Abdulrahman Yakayev makes easy work. We predicted it. By the way, we went 4-1 on predictions on this card, so very happy with that. Excellent work, and we shall definitely see him in the next 4 months. Then, second last matchup of the evening, Marcio Barbosa and Damian Wilson. Now, Marcio Barbosa was the one who was coming in with 18 professional fights. This guy was talented. Okay, this guy was so talented, and I knew Damon Wilson was getting knocked out when they were telling his backstory. This is a weird guy. This is a goofy guy. He was saying my nickname's the Nomad, and when I get in the octagon, I get in the MMA ring, this Nomad personality comes out of me. I'm not even myself. I'm the Savage. I'm this different beast. And I'm hearing this, and I'm just like, this guy's getting finished. Then they were saying about how he's living on Dominic Cruz's roof. Don't even ask me. I have no idea. DC was literally clouding about air. He's like, is this guy dumb or something? Someone want to tell this guy he's dumb. DC was an absolute riot on these episodes. By the way, the commentary you hear on Dan West Contender Series, easily better than the ones here on UFC events. They just say whatever they have on their mind. But as for this fight, look, Marcel Barbosa drops him in 4 minutes, twice in 4 minutes, I should say. They're the first knockdown, I thought he was out cold. I thought David Wilson was out cold, but I'm pretty sure when he hit the canvas, it woke him up so hard he just jolted right back up, got right back into it, but Marcel Barbosa stayed on him, eventually just face planted him down, hits a cut, didn't even need like a follow punch. Ref was like, this is just enough, call the fight. And Marcel Barbosa gets his 16th career finish in 17 career wins, 16 round one finishes. 16 round one finishes, 14 KOs, 2 subs. This guy's crazy. This guy's crazy. His last loss was to Gabriel Santos 3 years ago. Yeah. Yeah, this guy's going to be a problem in the men's featherweight division. I kid you not. I could throw this guy at a ranked opponent, for goodness sakes. I want to see this guy take on a Billy Quarantillo, take on a... Who's even fighting at featherweight nowadays? Who moved up to featherweight? I don't even know who fights at featherweight nowadays. Chepe Mariscal, Jack Jenkins, I don't know. I want to see Marcel Barbosa in the UFC. I absolutely love it. Now, as for Damon Wilson, clearly not game at all. I will say out of the four people who lost, Christian Perez looked the best, I will say, just because of his control time against Manuel Sosa and the amount of punches he was able to eat. Other than that, no losers getting a contract on this episode. But Marcel Barbosa, the most veteran, the most seasoned, and now, yes, the 30, what is he now? Marcel Barbosa, 27-year-old. Wow, only 27 years old. He's coming in 17-2, 16 finishes all in round one. Yeah, this guy's going to be a problem in the UFC. Then we get to our featured bout on the card, middleweight division, Ryan Gondra, Trent Miller. Trent Miller stepping in on short notice to, was it Ryan Gondra stepping in on short notice? I think it was Trent Miller stepping in on short notice, but doesn't matter. Ryan Gondra brutally knocks him out. I mean, Ryan Gondra's fighting like Trent Miller was his childhood bully. I mean, this guy just wouldn't stop throwing. 2 minutes and 51 seconds, all it takes to get the knockout. I mean, Ryan Gondra, his nickname's Problema. He is a problem. 7-fight winning streak now. He also got his 4th career knockout. This dude was scary. This dude was just swinging for the fences. Trent Miller never stood a chance, only landed 6 significant strikes. He will fall to 8-3. Good try, Trent Miller, but yeah. Just not game at all. Ryan Gondra, welcome. Welcome to the UFC. Happy to have you. Happy to see you. And you are going to be just a fun person to watch in the UFC once we get you an official fight. But 9.3, the best Dana White's Contender Series episode we've ever had. I have been watching since what, 2021, I want to say. And if they started in 2017, I've been watching since season 4. So after this will be like my 5th or 6th season of watching Dana White's Contender Series, this has been the best episode. By far, the finishes, the commentary, the moments, the reactions, all of it was amazing. And we have 5 new fighters who are coming in off of just a highlight reel knockouts into the UFC. So excited to see all these guys perform in the coming months, dare I say year. Sometimes it takes a year to get these guys booked, but by the time they step in, it should be good. But that's enough UFC for today's episode, as we're going to end things out with some Clash of Pairs predictions. That's right, for the next upcoming WWE PLE. Which I'm very excited for. I do work that day 5 to 11, but I should be able to catch the card. Should be able to. I'm going to make one of my other buddies, Garrett or Will, drive. Will be drive to work. I am not going to be, you know, missing this whatsoever. So without further ado, we have some matchups to predict and we have a card to discuss. Let's dive right on into it. So yes, the last time we talked about WWE, SummerSlam was coming to an end and it was utterly electric. So this is the follow-up pay-per-view to that, if you want to call it that. Going down at Paris La Défense Arena in Nanterre, France on August 31st. The promotional poster features Roman Reigns, which is kind of inspired by Vincent Van Gogh's The Starry Night painting. It is unique, I shall say that. And we have 5 matchups on this card. It should be more. It really should be more. The fact we don't have AJ Styles versus Dominic Mysterio is an absolute travesty. That is utterly ridiculous. And we have Nikki Bella and Becky Lynch on this. I have no words. Truly, I have no words. We also don't have the Women's World Championship. Like, that's actually a women's belt I want to see. We don't have Cody Rhodes, our WWE champion, on here. It is just an utter mess. But I will say the five matches we had should be pretty good. Let's talk about it. So, for starters, what I think they're going to open the night with is just my prediction, Roman Reigns versus Bronson Reed. If Roman Reigns is not the main event, what better way to start the card than with Roman Reigns? And Roman Reigns is taking on Bronson Reed. That is right. Roman Reigns has started this feud with Bronson Reed. And the only reason I think they've started a feud with Roman Reigns and Bronson Reed is to build up Bronson Reed. Look, this faction, Bron Breakker, Bronson Reed, and Seth Rollins, The Vision, if they want to. Are they called The Vision? I think they are called The Vision. That is their name or whatever. And if The Vision is to make them all stars, this is how you do it. Now, Roman Reigns, he's a guy who can just take defeats left, right, and center. He's like John Cena. He can just put over guys any way he wants, and he is still the top guy that we absolutely know and love. Now, the main storyline between these two, as goofy as it sounds, is that Bronson Reed has stolen two pairs of Roman Reigns' shoes, and they are calling this the Shula Falla match, not officially, just the internet wrestling community, and I think it's hilarious. I really do, but my one concern is that it appears Bronson Reed has been besting Roman Reigns on every episode of Raw. So usually, historically, that means that the babyface is going to win. Plus, I could easily see them just going for the Roman Reigns, get a huge pop from winning with the Paris crowd. But I'm going to hope WWE goes with the smart booking, and that is having Bronson Reed win. That's my prediction, is that Bronson Reed's going to win, but I can also just see them giving Roman Reigns the win. But they already did at SummerSlam, and you know, I understand you doing it there. You don't need to do it here. This is where you can put over Bronson Reed. This is where you can make him a star by beating Roman Reigns. And if Bronson Reed loses here, he'll just get buried. Like, at the end of the day, he'll get buried. I don't really think we're going to have any interferences here. Maybe from Bron Breakker, one may think, but if anything, I think we're going to be seeing Bronson Reed pick up the victory over Roman Reigns. It would be a great way to get Bronson Reed over with the fans. Next up, you have Becky Lynch taking on Nikki Bella for the WWE Women's Intercontinental Championship. Mind you, this is the wrong Intercontinental Championship they are having on here, but, you know, Nikki Bella, big name to get Becky Lynch over. Becky Lynch is from Ireland, which is kind of close to France, if you will. We're talking about European setting compared to the American setting we're usually in. And this is just an easy Becky Lynch win. I mean, there is really no shock. Actually, the biggest shocker of this wouldn't even be LA Knight winning the World Heavy Championship. It would be Nikki Bella beating Becky Lynch in Paris. There's just no way Nikki Bella is taking home the victory here. There's just no way. I just don't really see a world where you can give her the belt. It just has to be Becky Lynch. She's been on absolute tear with Bayley, with Lyra Valkyrie, and this has been a great filler feud. I don't really know where she's going from here, if it's going to be her versus Bayley, per se. I can't really tell you, but Becky Lynch over Nikki Bella should be pretty obvious, and I do think it's going to take place second in the card. That's where I think you're going to get some good match placement, and that's where I'm going to have it at. So Becky Lynch beats Nikki Bella, how about that? But very interesting, you have Nikki Bella and John Cena on the same card. I know this has happened before, but I wonder if they're going to cross paths at all. I wonder if they would give us a very interesting backstage segment. I don't know professionally into their work world how their relationship is, but that would be pretty comedic. So I also am very interested to see Nikki Bella's in-ring wrestling. She hasn't been too bad on Raw or anything, but historically, she is just nowhere near as good as Becky Lynch. But maybe Becky Lynch can just bring out the best stuff from Nikki Bella. But yes, we're going to go with Becky Lynch. Then, what I think will be the halfway point of the card, it is the good old-fashioned Donnybrook match, Sheamus versus Rusev. What a random match to put on here. Usually WWE does not do such things. Usually it's all title matches or big names, but no, they're actually giving us a good old-fashioned Donnybrook match, which, by the way, is basically no holds barred, street fight, no disqualification. They're just going to use a bunch of objects to hit each other, probably inspired by, the European culture, if you will. But Rusev and Sheamus have been feuding each other over on Raw for the past few weeks, dare I say months, and it's just happy to see both those guys get a fight in front of a PLE crowd. Sheamus is from Ireland, I'm sure he'll be favored heavily here. Rusev is from Russia, so, you know, I think he's actually from Russia. Is he, or is he from somewhere else in Eastern Europe? But Rusev, Sheamus, they've been having this 7-matchup series or something. I think Sheamus is going to win. I think they're going to go for a babyface pop here, especially if you have heel Becky Lynch and heel Bronson Reed win, which honestly makes me think they might go Roman Reigns here, but I don't know. I see a good case for the heels really running this card, so having Sheamus win here would be a really good break of everything, get the fans behind him, but there's a lot of fun you can do with this match, a lot of cool spots you could do with kendo sticks and chairs and garbage cans and all sorts of tools, like pressure, like an Irish cane or something, going through barricades and tables. It's just going to be a fun match. It's going to be a car wreck, and I just hope that it is. I hope we get a definitive winner here. You know, I feel like they're dragging this out, and I almost feel like this is giving Cesaro and Sheamus vibes of the partnership they formed in 2017, which ended up making one of them one of the best tag teams we've had in a long time, which honestly would be something good for Raw. I know it would be repetitive, but honestly, I would not be mad if Sheamus and Rusev team up. You get, like, the Sheamus-Rusev connection or something like that, and these two just run everything on Raw, because the Raw tag team division is dead. I mean, who's even the tag team champions? Is it the Judgment Day still? I generally have no idea. So having Sheamus and Rusev maybe, you know, after this matchup, go to war, they shake hands, they form a truce, then spontaneously on Monday Night Raw the next day or the next 2 weeks, they help each other out in some regard, and they form a tag team. I would love to see that. But yeah, I'm going to go with Sheamus. It should be fun, and I'm excited to see what takes place. Now, before I get into our big two matchups, because there is certainly something interesting to be said about both, I do just want to talk about the matchups that aren't taking place on here that really should have been. And of course, that is AJ Styles, Dominic Mysterio. Now, last time they were in Paris, 2024, I think it was in May they were here, May 2024, yes, just over a year ago, or way over a year ago, but AJ Styles was the most over fighter with the crowd. He was more over than Cody Rhodes, more over than Randy Orton, more over than Damian Priest, Jey Uso. He was the most over fighter on the Paris crowd last year, and they're putting him on the Monday Night Raw. Now, mind you, that Monday Night Raw is in Paris, but it makes no sense why you can't just put this fight on here. I know that we make only matchups that are, we make only cards that are only five matchups, Triple H, but seriously, what are we doing? Dominic Mysterio is becoming a global star. He's going to be fighting for the AAA Championship in Mexico against Vikingo, for goodness sakes, at Triple Mania. And here we have AJ Styles missing a massive Paris PLE. Him and Dominic Mysterio would have torn the roof off that place, and it deserves to be on there more, dare I say, than pretty much everything. I think out of all the matchups on here, I would rather see AJ Styles versus Dominic Mysterio. I would easily want to see that. It is a huge miss on WWE's part, and has been pretty much the only critique that they have had so far. I mean, it has been a massive miss, and I would hope that maybe Triple H would change his mind, but I think the card's made up, and you're not getting AJ Styles and Dominic Mysterio on this card, which is such a huge miss. Another huge miss. Obviously, Naomi has had to vacate the Women's World Heavyweight Championship, or just Women's World Championship. Now, Steffi Vicaire was supposed to fight her on here. In fact, she just, it wasn't even supposed to be Naomi. It could have even been Tiffany Stratton. But instead of having her fight Roxanne Perez, Rhea Ripley to actually crown a new champion, they just canceled the matchup, which makes no utter sense. And what I absolutely love is that they have Adam Pearce deliver all this news, acting like it's actually Adam Pearce, when everyone that's not a child or think that wrestling is actually real knows that it is Triple H making all these executive decisions. Why are we keeping Steffi Vicaire off this card? Her versus Rhea Ripley would have been amazing. Her versus Roxanne Perez. Her versus Io Sky, for goodness sakes, would have been all amazing. But no, we don't get any of that. We just have five card matchups. And the fact that we are leaving that off this card, the fact that Cody Rhodes and Drew McIntyre are not on here is insane. I know they're going to be wrestling at WrestlePalooza, but come on, WWE. That would have been another electric match here. We don't have Drew McIntyre on here. We don't have Steffi Vicaire. We don't have AJ Styles. Instead, we have Nikki Bella. We have Rusev, we have Jey Uso, which the Jey Uso entrance should be pretty cool, but I mean, come on, WWE, come on, we have Logan Paul on here, for goodness sakes. Oh, just kind of a miss, both the same words you could use here on WWE's part, not having those matchups on here, but hey, what are you going to do? Three misses for their part. Such a shame. They can redeem themselves with the SmackDown beforehand, but every single Raw and SmackDown has sucked. I'm so glad I don't actually watch it. I get all my news from clips online, on Twitter, on Instagram, and from a wrestling YouTuber named Santi Zab, which you probably know, and that is just all I get. I'm not spending 3 hours Monday night and Friday night watching just garbage TV. I'm just not going to do that, and that's what WWE has been pumping now. But Now, back to the card, because we have two matchups which could both potentially main event, and that is Seth Rollins, CM Punk, Jey Uso, and LA Knight in a Fatal 4-Way match for the World Heavyweight Championship, and the singles match between John Cena and Logan Paul. Now, whatever happens in both of these matchups, the bout order will determine what big event takes place. So let's just assume, since it's John Cena, that he's the main event. Now, I don't think John Cena and Logan Paul will be the main event, personally. I think it would make more sense to do Seth Rollins, CM Punk, Jey Uso, and LA Knight, but it has been a recurring theme to have John Cena be the main event. So, if John Cena and Logan Paul is the main event, you're going to probably have Logan Paul win, and you're going to have Brock Lesnar come out. That is what is going to take place. Now, if you don't have this be the main event, then John Cena is going to beat Logan Paul. That is exactly what I think is going to take place. Whether it's second to last, opening the card, if John Cena and Logan Paul is not the main event, then you're going to see John Cena win. But if it is the main event, not only is Logan Paul going to win, but Brock Lesnar is going to come out and attack John Cena, because not the following Monday night, but the one after, I think it's the next two Friday Night SmackDowns, actually, you're going to see appearances by Brock Lesnar. So I can just assume Brock is going to appear here if it is the main event. Now, if it's not the main event, I don't see that taking place whatsoever, but if this isn't the main event, there will be no Brock Lesnar, and I think it would just make sense for John Cena to win. So that is a massive bout order thing to be aware of there. Other than that, we have the Fatal 4-Way for the World Heavyweight Championship, and I do think that no matter where it's at, you could have the fourth member of the Vision appear. I know that is a massive rumor that Bronson Reed will come out, take out Jey Uso, Bron Breakker will take out LA Knight, and then it'll just be Seth Rollins and CM Punk. CM Punk will be getting the better of Seth Rollins, and the fourth member of the Vision will appear. I think that could work on both ends, but I really do feel like if it's the main event, it is going to happen. That's just how I view the John Cena and Logan Paul match as well, that whichever one of those is the main event, you're going to be seeing a surprise appearance, a outside interference that's going to be awesome. Now, if this isn't the main event, I think the chances do dip a tinge, as it will probably steal away if Brock Lesnar comes out for John Cena and Logan Paul. So if this is the main event, you can expect someone to come in. Will it be Tony D'Angelo coming over from NXT? Will it be, per se, the returning Dragunov? Will it be Austin Theory? I don't know, but whoever they pair with this group, it has to work. It has to work. They can add a number of people to here, and I know whoever they add will be worth it. I think one of the biggest swerves they could do would be have a woman appear. I know Roxanne Perez attacked CM Punk at a house show, which was pretty entertaining, but I don't think it'll be her. That would be kind of cool, though, if they had like Roxanne Perez go out just like low blow CM Punk, but I don't think that's going to take place. If I had any money, I think it'd be Tony D'Angelo. You know, with NXT, they think they're calling him up, and they have this weird segment, but it could, at the end of the day, be anybody, so... By the way, for that matchup, Seth Rollins is winning. You know, interference, no interference, Seth Rollins is winning, okay? They're not giving CM Punk the World Heavyweight Championship yet. They're probably going to give him the WWE Championship at WrestleMania. Jey Uso, they're not giving him that belt back. LA Knight, I think they're just always going to have him be the closest he could get and just stripping it away from him. But, yeah. Seth Rollins is winning no matter where the match card is placed. And I think the big question is that John Cena and Logan Paul, who is going to win that? That is going to be the big tell here. I think that is probably the most 50-50 matchup you're going to get where you're actually intrigued to see what happens. Because obviously, Seth Rollins is going to win. Obviously, Becky Lynch is going to win. Roman Reigns and Bronson Reed, I don't think it's going to be shocking whoever wins. I just think if Bronson Reed loses, we all just go, oh, he's buried. And if Bronson Reed wins, we go, yes, this is exactly what should have happened. And Sheamus and Rusev is a toss-up. You can have either man win, and I don't think it'll affect either of their standings in the company. But yeah, Clash in Paris goes down this upcoming Sunday. It should be action-packed. It goes down at 1 o'clock Central Time for me. 2 o'clock Eastern for any Eastern viewers. And yeah, this is one of the final few pay-per-views before we get into ESPN. That's right after this. It is WrestlePalooza. And WrestlePalooza will obviously have John Cena versus Brock Lesnar. It'll have Cody Rhodes versus Drew McIntyre. You're going to be having Steffi Vacaire probably fighting for the women's championship on there. Tiffany Stratton will probably be on there. It's going to be massive. And that goes down Saturday, September 20th. So in the meantime, we will head to Paris. And then actually, I am very excited as for the UFC, I should say, not the WWE, but the UFC, we'll be heading to Paris as well. after our next event as Najdeem Vaf will take on Kaio Bro-Rollowin. This card is already jam-packed. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 matchups, and they keep adding more. They just keep adding more. I absolutely love it. They recently made Los Enquirite and Patricio Pitbull official, which is going to be super action-packed. I'm excited for that. You also have Sean O'Bannon on here. Brad Tavares is back. William Gomez, the debuting Rupert Ruchala. Renat Fakhrinnaev on Andreas Gustafsson is going to be a slept-on prelim. The debuting Ante Delige taking on a top 10 heavyweight in Marcin Tybura is going to be crucial for the heavyweight division. Ferris Iam is back, Modestus Bukauskas, Mason Jones, and of course the two headliners, Benoit Saint-Denis, Mauricio Ruffi, and then Nazanin Yavov and Kyle Barallo are both going to be star-studded. I can't believe that's really two Paris guys, and I guess technically Russian too for Nazanin, but two Paris guys and two Fighting Nerds guys are the main event and co-main event, which is super exciting, and it is kind of good because let's say hypothetically we lose Nazanin Yavov versus Kyle Barallo, BSD and Ruffy is an excellent step in a co-main event to become the new main event. After that, we then do head to San Antonio, Texas for UFC Noche. Diego Lopez, Gene Silva. By the way, Gene Silva, another fighting nerd. You also have Rob Font, Emeril Rosas Jr. So our next two main events and co-main events are absolutely amazing. But yeah, that's all I got for today's episode, ladies and gentlemen. If you haven't had an opportunity, you can go back and rewatch all of Dana White's Contender Series, all five fights, in probably 30 minutes. Probably even 15, 20 minutes or something. You probably watch it in 20 minutes. It's only the three-round fight, which ends in round three, by the way, which is the longest fight. Other than that, the other ones all end in round number one. They are all worth a watch, as all five of those guys are probably going to make an impact when they get to the UFC. Also, make sure to check out Clash in Paris. And if I didn't really clarify my predictions, I'm going to go with John Cena. I'm going to go with Logan Paul, because I think John Cena and Logan Paul is going to be the main event. So I'm going to go with Logan Paul, going to go with Seth Rollins, going to go with Sheamus, going to go with Becky Lynch, and going to go with Bronson Reed. And of course, yeah, we had some new rankings updates. We had some new fights being announced. A lot of fun stuff going on in the world of TKO. Maybe I should call this the TKO podcast, because all I talk about is WWE and UFC, which are both under the TKO banner. Damn you, Dwayne Johnson. You own all that I talk about. But yeah, ladies and gentlemen, that's all I have for today's episode. I'll be back next week with all sorts of recaps and new predictions. You guys have a fantastic weekend, and I'll see you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.